The Carmichael Dave Show.
He's on the microphone. When he's not on the microphone, he's playing a song. And when he's not playing a song, he's on the microphone. And then boom!
With Jason Ross.
No, he didn't. Yes, he did.
Call or text at 916-339-1140.
It's the Carmichael Dave Show with Jason Ross on Sacktown Sports.
Welcome back. Carmichael Dave, Jason Ross. Noted journalist from The Athletic. Sam Amy joining us. Good morning, Sam.
Good morning, guys. Nice to see you. my mind's a little distracted. You see this Minnesota news this morning?
Yeah, that's what we just led into. It's Glenn Taylor putting out a statement. Basically, not so fast on the whole Alex Rodriguez thing. This thing was all but wrapped up, but Timberwolves PR, I won't read the whole release, but I'll give you what I have here. I'll give you the top line. Glenn Taylor confirmed the expiration of the option of Mark Laurie and Alex Rodriguez acquiring the T-Wolves and the Minnesota Lynx. It was supposed to occur within 90 days following the notice issued that expired yesterday. Now, he does say, I'll continue to work with Mark, Alex, and the rest of the group to ensure the teams have the resources to compete at the highest levels. But here's the hammer. The Timberwolves and Lynx are no longer for sale. Woo!
Your thoughts, Anthony Edwards and Rudy Gobert and Chris Finch in the middle of a historic Timberwolves season, and you look up and you're worried that the lights might go off. Yeah, it's not good, man. I mean, like you, a lot of people thought that this deal was unofficially done. I think we are kind of guilty at times of just, you know, forgetting how massive these transactions are. But yeah, and I wish I don't have fresh intel or reporting on it. I just know that, you know, Glenn Taylor, I don't know his exact age. He's a very old man at this point. He had been pretty stubborn to sell the team. This was a good opportunity, and it seemed like everything was going really well. Obviously that's not the case. So that's tough from a basketball standpoint. You know, you got a franchise that hasn't won a first round playoff series in 20 years and, you know, has got a good thing going. This is a hell of a distraction.
Yeah, and Sam, I know obviously this is totally in its infancy, and you said you don't have a lot of intel on it, so I may be asking you an unfair question, but, you know, generally when a team goes for sale, it also elevates everything, right? The lowest level team, all the valuations go up, it's good for the league, money, just more money's coming in. So not only what impact on the T-Wolves, but any kind of impact, I guess, league-wide on this?
I don't know. I mean, like you said, Jay, you know, I do admittedly hate, you know, reacting in real time where I haven't even picked up a call. I know that I never heard anything negative about the transition process. You know, I'm close with our guy in Minnesota, John Krasinski, who does a very good job covering that team. And honestly,
the office too.
What's that? Yeah, exactly. Yes. And, you know, never heard any rumblings about things going awry. You know, I think about the ripple effect of that transaction and how, like, even in our world, like, they, you know, I don't want to put anybody's business in the streets, but, like, they had members of high-ranking members of the media relations staff, for example, that you got the sense that, like, they came to Minnesota from other teams thinking, like, oh, okay, this is an exciting new era. And, like, these are actual people who thought they were joining something that was on the rise instead of, you know, this creates a real problematic thing because you have an owner who was clearly A, willing to sell, B, money-wise, I don't know where he's at. I mean, today's NBA ownership experience is wildly expensive. So I don't know what Glenn's books look like. And the fact that he has to say that we'll continue to make sure the team has resources, you know, is like me telling my wife, like, no, I'm, yeah, we can probably pay the electric bill, you know? Yeah,
probably. Okay, you know? Yeah.
Well, look, I will avoid the urge to get incredibly nerdy on this, and we'll get to the Kings in a second, just for those who are saying we're being nerdy. But Sam, couple of things fascinate me about this. And again, we're reacting in real time. Number one, it was just reported a few days ago. I remember it caught my eye that Rodriguez and his partner had tapped Dyal Capital as the funding to finish this payment. And why did that perk my ears up? Because Dyal Capital is a minority owner of the Sacramento Kings. They were one of the first places that the NBA approved these equity firms to take smaller stakes in teams. And that's when you saw a lot of Kings minority owners sell a couple of years ago. Dyal Capital was the one that funded that in. I think they have, with the Timberwolves, it would have been five teams they have pieces of. They're limited by the NBA. They divested their shares in the Suns when the Suns were sold. So something had to happen on the Dyal Capital end. Either that fell through or they didn't like it. We'll find that out. Secondly, I am not a rich man like these people, so I understand how it sounds with me grading their moves. But I have logic behind what I'm about to say. This is, like, to me, the dumbest time to sell an NBA team you could possibly be into for two main reasons. Number one, MLS, NFL, Major League Baseball, hockey, they're all locked into long-term deals for television. And what we've seen and what has been proven is that live sports is the highest commodity when it comes to advertisers, because you're not DVRing, you're not fast forwarding, you're watching these spots in real time, both during breaks and during games. There's a ton of money. The NBA is about to sign their big deal, their big TV deal, which is going to be a massive, massive windfall to the owners of these teams. Secondly, that will, as you know, clear the way for expansion, which is almost certainly going to be Seattle and Las Vegas. That's $5 billion they've said, they've floated out there per expansion team. That's $10 billion divided through 30 teams, not to mention team valuations then skyrocketing with the all ships rise types of thing. I have no idea why an owner would choose now to sell a team when he or she could wait two or three years and truly realize somewhere in the neighborhood of $1 billion extra in revenue. So I understand maybe why Glenn Taylor became reticent on selling. I don't know if that's the deal or not, and I just got nerdy about everything, but it does seem weird.
Yeah, you are a nerd, man. What the
I
hell?
Am kind of an I know.
You just made me pick the phone up and Google Glenn Taylor age. He's 82 years old. He doesn't have a few years to wait. He also, you know, has lived a long life, been successful. These are the thoughts of a much younger entrepreneur like yourself, Dave. You're clearly on your way to getting into NBA ownership. I also think about, because admittedly, as you know, it's like, the main crux of my job is diving in on the basketball and the team. So my disclaimer is I am not a sports business reporter. I have a good understanding of the way it works. But when somebody like Mark Cuban sells the Mavs when he did, or his portion of them, and his logic, agree or disagree, some people thought he was, you know, framing it in a curious way. You know, he painted a picture of this being, you know, near the peak for the NBA, and that he was concerned about a bit of a downturn when it comes to the next deal, that this deal was going to be great. But then after this deal, when you have, you know, potentially the fragmenting of the rights among multiple streaming partners and really just kind of a confusing landscape in terms of content and the customer and consumption and the best way to package all this stuff, you know, he got out when, you know, the getting was good, and that's the way he kind of framed it. So that, to me, combined with, I mean, I think the Glenn Taylor age thing is, you know, that's the biggest thing is he thought it was going to be a wrap for him. He was going to have courtside seats and enjoy this Timberwolves team. And then on the basketball side, you know, the success is wonderful for them, but they were also faced with a really challenging offseason where their luxury tax bill, you know, if they don't trade Karl Anthony Towns, was going to be up in the neighborhood of the Warriors, just, you know, tops in the league. Some big time bills to pay. And now the question obviously is who's going to pay them.
And Jason, just before I turn it to you, Adrian Wojnarowski reporting, Glenn Taylor says the window for Mark Lurie and Alex Rodriguez to purchase expired. That we knew. And, quote, the buyer could have been entitled to a limited extension. However, those circumstances did not occur. So this thing keeps unraveling. Stay tuned, and we'll have all that for you.
Yeah. So Sam, Dave mentioned the Kings. Let's talk about them a little bit here. I would say in just the last 2 days, things were kind of going better for the Kings. They were back into sixth. They lose and get blown out by Dallas. And then last night, basically every combination of game went wrong for the Sacramento Kings. Now, still 10 games to go. Lots of things can shift, but you know, we like to check in with you on your thought on where the Kings are now and where you think they might be when this is all wrapped up.
Yeah, interesting week. You know, this whole Dallas twofer is kind of fun to track. You know, I'm writing a little bit about the Mavs for tomorrow in the context of the West playoff race. One thing, this doesn't make Kings fans feel any better, but I've been telling people this week about that last game that is, for me, pretty unique, is that I feel like it's the first time all year with this team that my takeaway was, oh, no, I think you're allowed to say this word on your station. They just got their ass kicked. Like, that's it. You know, like, that's it. It's not why didn't they show up against Charlotte or Detroit or whatever. You watch that game, and they tried. I mean, they tried. The first half, the offense was actually okay. But you could see the struggle. You could see, you know, Domas down in the paint, you know, doing his shimmy like he does, and just he's on the doorstep of finishing and is not able to in ways that we're not used to seeing. You know, Gafford size, Derek Lively the second size, you know, a lot of guys on that team that have length. And what I'm kind of writing about is, and this is, I guess, to maybe lessen the sting for Kings fans, is like if you didn't know and you just looked at the standings and said, oh, the Mavs are somewhat in the middle of the pack, just like the Kings. Since, make sure I have this right, March 1st, I think it is, in this stretch where they've won 9 out of 10 games, they have the second best defense in basketball. That's with Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving in your backcourt, or, you know, running the team. And so I'm shocked that their defense is really good. I talked to Jason Kidd the other night about it. And one thing he shared that was pretty fascinating was that, you know, the officiating, as everybody knows, has changed in the second half of the season. And Jason is on the competition committee for the league. And he was essentially saying that, you know, once he started hearing whispers that a shift was coming, you know, he talked to his team about how it's time to get tough, and it's time to realize that if you're willing to, you're about to be able to guard and to really guard and to get up into guys, and you're not going to get the ticky-tack fouls. And then the inverse of that is telling a guy like Luka, big fella, we need you. We love you. You're about to get whooped on pretty good by opposing defenses. So you got to be tough. And the other night they did that, and they hit shots. But I thought their defense was the biggest thing.
Sam Amick with us from The Athletic. You said something there, and you're 100% right. And you've really seen it flourish with a team like the Knicks, who, by the way, also put up almost 150 points last night, which is incredibly scary. But Sam, do you have any color on, you know, you mentioned the officiating's change and a lot of these fouls aren't being called, and I guess my question is, why? What are we doing? Did it just arbitrarily change? Was there an alarm clock that went off? Was there a memo sent out? Did Adam Silver just say, yeah, you know what, I'm tired of this? Why would you change things in the middle of the year, which is going to help some teams, but let's be honest, it's going to adversely hurt other teams?
Well, I mean, full disclosure, I love it. I know everybody.
I do too.
I love it. I feel like they're getting back to the game a little bit. But I have my informed opinion, and I'll say a couple things. For one, you know, I cover All-Star Weekend in Indianapolis. That game was a disaster, obviously, you know, 200 plus points between, you know, whatever the final score was. It was an abomination when it comes to the game. Well, I go in to do post-game media, and Jalen Brunson is doing a little group session, right? And he, like, very in an unaware kind of way and not reading the room, like, innocently tells a story about how at halftime of the All-Star game, the guys in the East locker room looked at the score and said, hey, we could probably get to 200. Let's try to get there. instead of, God forbid, like, let's go get a couple stops and not give up 180 or whatever it was. And between that and Anthony Edwards saying, you know, we're not even trying, you know, I heard a lot of stuff that night about how upset Adam Silver was. So to me, that's a flashpoint that was kind of the final straw for Adam in the league, where a conversation, you know, because it represented what was happening during the regular season. And it was just symbolic of that. They then, you know, had points of emphasis given to all of the refs that, you know, that kind of led to the shift in officiating. And I mean, that, you know, I don't know. Is it problematic to do it midseason? Yes. But you're talking about some of the numbers that were coming out of that first half and really these past couple of years, you know, they were changing really the history of the game. You had all of a sudden 50-point games were no big deal. Yeah, it's been an abrupt shift, and it has made for an interesting turn here in the season. But to me, that's the root of it.
I bet, you know, as an offshoot, GMs may not love it because they could have said, well, look, I kind of made my team to fit these rules, and maybe right. Some already have the more physical players slash teams. But it seems really odd. I mean, I think the end result is better for the game, but it's weird to do it in season as opposed to say, all right, you know, next season, these are our points of emphasis. We got to make this more palatable.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, that's all fair. You know, and even to go deeper in the weeds, guys, you know, at our place, we've been asking a lot of questions about the frustration with the officials relating to the first half of the season. And we had been doing a fair amount of digging on, like, are we going to do some coverage, you know, talking about why GMs and coaches and players are so upset about the officiating this year. And I think that was a factor too, because, and I'm maybe giving the media too much credit, but I am a believer that, you know, when the scrutiny comes and the pressure comes, and it comes in a lot of different forms. Sometimes it comes in the form of reporters asking a lot of questions and augmenting the viewpoints of people who are not happy. And I think the league looked, you know, felt all of that, saw all of that, didn't like the commentary relating to the state of the game, and decided to do something about it. Again, right now in the moment, I'm guilty of being stuck in the, I don't really care how they got here. I kind of love it. Even if it means, admittedly, that like some of the stories we were going to tell, maybe we're now telling a different story that's not as salacious or not. I mean, the anger level has gone down. As a quick side story, you know, we're doing our anonymous player poll, which I think I've mentioned to you guys. Mm-hmm. And one of the questions is, what grade do you give the officials this season? And it's like, in the couple of weeks that we've been gathering answers, I've noted, like, now I've gotten a couple guys that were like, well, I was going to give them a C, but I guess now a B, you know, like answers are changing because of the way things are being called.
Interesting. As you, but we were, and I know James Harden's an exception, but we were commenting last week that, I don't know if he's the only one ever, but when you consider how many points he scored, how much offense he's put out there, and you know how I feel about James.
Big fan.
He has more free throws made than field goals made in his career. And you hear some of those rumblings, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, a few others, where it's like, ah, they're free throw merchants. Joel Embiid's gotten that tack too. And I agree with you, dude. Like, and I think we all three agree. We want to see defense back in the game. Not 1988 Knicks and Hornets defense, but we want to see defense back. The shift in the middle of the season, not to just bury the point here and grind it, but the shift in the middle of the season is a little interesting, a pissed off Adam Silver, if you will. But now all of a sudden, you've got teams, we just mentioned them, a team like the Knicks now all of a sudden, it's like they got jet skis, man. Like that Tom Thibodeau's got these guys playing well, and they look like they can beat anybody in the league. And these types of shifts in officiating are going to highly benefit teams like that.
They are. I mean, as you were painting that picture, Dave, I got a image in my mind of Domas, you know, wiping blood off his face the other day. Mm-hmm. A guy like that is like, all right, hey, I'm not a big fan of this, because now a lot of this stuff doesn't draw the whistle. You know,
right.
Watching that Philly Clippers game last night, mm-hmm. down the stretch, it was a great game. and I'm forgetting, who did Kawhi block on the last shot? Was that Maxi? No, it was Kelly Oubre.
Kelly Oubre.
And, you know, I kind of love the fact that, you know, there was a little bit of body contact, but it's a huge play. Let's not just give the game away. No call. Kawhi, you know, wedgies the ball right in the rim. And there were quite a few plays down that stretch where the Sixers were losing their minds, because if the whistle went the way that it did a couple months ago, they probably win the game.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, it is a big shift. It's not anything like I've ever seen. And we'll see where it goes. But, you know, again, I do think it matters, and it's good for now, because this season was losing credibility. This, you know, really the league was losing credibility. I think that people want balance. I think people want defense to matter. And, you know, it's a little wonky because of the midseason thing, but, you know, I hope they continue it going into next year.
And kind of ironic, Sam, that on the same thing we're talking about, officials letting things go, it takes 4 minutes yesterday for Draymond to get two T's and get ejected.
It's crazy.
I mean, and just the look like Steph had, like, it was such a critical game that they still won, to their credit, but it almost looked like, oh, not again.
Oh, 100%. I mean, I watched the full clip this morning because I had seen somebody say Steph was crying.
Yeah.
Like, oh, man. And I thought, oh, I'm sure it's social media. They're exaggerating. Well, no, he was crying. Like, we need a new word other than crying, because crying in sports denotes, you know, well, of course it denotes Tom Hanks and Little League of Their Own, but like, it, like, this was just passion and intensity and frustration. So like, those tears are different. This is over being overwhelmed. This is being overburdened. And in a weird way, part of me loves it, because it's like, I love the athletes where even though you're making $1 billion, you absolutely are invested and you care. And that's who Steph is. So to watch him after Draymond gets ejected, you know, lean over, shake his head. You could tell, I think Steve Kerr pats him on the back, and we can all relate, where it's that moment where you really don't want anybody to make it worse by touching you.
Yeah.
And Steve like touches him, and next thing you know, Steph is, he's got the jersey up on the face and he's wiping those eyes, man. Like he was, then when they win the game, and he was huge in the last 30 seconds, you know, I don't know if this even made the rounds on social media. I'm sure it did, because people don't miss anything. But he walks over to the bench and absolutely kicks the hell out of a couple of chairs.
Yep.
And I mean, that to me, you might as well have said, you know, God dang it, Draymond. Like, yeah, dude, we can't do this anymore. So, yeah, they're in it right now. They're trying to hold on. And last thing Steph wants is, you know, let alone being in the play-in game, is to be sitting home watching, playing basketball.
Well, and not to get all Sigmund Freud, but, and also we're talking about sports, not real life, but watching Steph, we talked about this earlier, Sam. Look, this isn't an excuse, nor did I feel bad for him, but in watching Draymond last night, it occurred to me really for the first time, and it reminded me of DeMarcus Cousins and what he had said before about his own temper. I'm watching Draymond and I go, you know what? I almost feel bad for him, because he can't stop. He cannot stop. Whether it's a family member, you know, that has some form of addiction or is a chronic liar or whatever it may be, he could not stop. I don't think he had the ability to shut his mouth and walk away. He had redlined. And in Steph's case, it's almost like that family member that you love that promised this was going to be the last time, that had once again had disappointed you. And to kind of wrap everything up, I'm going to ask you, I'm going to put you on the spot, and I apologize, and if this hasn't happened, whatever. Has anyone to your knowledge ever asked Steph, like, in a deep kind of way, like, dude, have you ever confronted Draymond? Has there ever been private? Have you ever lost your mind on him? Because I got to wonder what that locker room was like after the game when they're one-on-one with each other.
Yeah, I mean, he's talked about that at length, like what the conversations are like behind the scenes. And yes, you know, the answer you get is that, yes, he's absolutely confronted him. The thing with Steph, and you could see it, it's kind of there for everyone to see on video last night, is that even Steph's I'm not saying he's never lost his mind on Draymond. I don't know. But like his version of addressing it in confrontation, he's just not wired that way. So like he has an opportunity when Draymond is sitting there chewing the ref's ear off to literally grab him by the jersey and push him physically away and say, stop.
Yeah.
But instead it's one hand on the chest, mildly saying, like tapping him saying, all right, that's enough. That's enough. And it wasn't enough. Like if you, I'm trying to think of somebody who kind of just did it differently. You know, maybe even a Kings reference. I mean, like a Corliss Williamson back in the day, right?
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to grab you by the jersey and say, no. Like, here's a good one. Corliss played with Ron Artest and was the only guy that I ever came across who scared Ron Artest. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Like, mm-hmm. like, mm-hmm. And I say scared lightly, but, like, he had the ability and the strength and the confidence to tell a guy like that, no, you're done, and we're going to not get kicked out of the game. He's just not wired that way. And he wants Draymond to do it, again, not to be corny, but out of love, because they have this brotherhood that goes back, you know, for so long. But you could see it right there, man. He's exhausted by it. And this is the predicament for him, is that he knows, I know their intent. I know that people get their shots in about how bad they are right now. But, you know, in his mind, like the only path to the type of success that he is used to and that he wants still includes Draymond Green. If you take that away, I think he's probably got a fear of the unknown on the other side. But then you see, you know, what comes with that experience. And you're right about Draymond. I mean, listen, I know you alluded to the fact that the whistle came quick for Draymond, where it's not coming quick for others. First of all, you can read his lips. You know, you can't call the ref a B word with the right. A word after it.
Yeah.
And he knew, like, he didn't argue the ejection. He just headed straight for the exits.
Yep, he got his money's worth, and he let his team down, and I'm sure they let him know that. Much more on that, I'm sure. Sam's got his article coming out about the Mavs to take a look at that as well with The Athletic, along with all their other coverage, I'm sure, of the Minnesota sales situation and so much more. Always a great conversation, brother. We're way late. Appreciate you. Say hi to the fam. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, guys. Be good.
You too. That's Sam Amick. We will take a quick break. When we come back, the guest cavalcade rolls on. Marcus Breton of the Sacramento Bee will join us to talk about his article today. He says Sacramento, the perfect place for the Oakland Athletics. We'll talk to him about that right after this.
What's hot?
Yeah, hot. Real hot.
And what's not?
It's not good.
Brought to you by American Energy Heating and Air, Sacramento's complete heating and cooling company and second opinion partner.
All right, before we get to that, just a quick programming correction. We went long with Sam, as we often do, which meant we'd have like 3 minutes with Marcos. So we're gonna flip-flop here. We're going to do who's hot, who's not here. Marcos will join us in just a couple minutes in the next segment. So, Chris, take it away. Who is hot?
The Oakland A's?
Oh.
Huh?
Oh.
In their past 10 home opening games, the A's are 7-3.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Last season, remember, they started the season at home with a 2-1 win over the Angels.
I also want to add to that who's hot, more like what's hot, and it has to do with the Oakland A's. Nothing I can say, and I'm not trying to be corny or shy here. I just don't want to get ahead of my skis. But hearing a lot more rumblings this morning on this A's to Sacramento thing, guys, I think we are about as close as you can get without being able to say something is officially done, but I'm hearing noises that that they are incredibly close to having this thing wrapped up. So stay tuned on that. I don't know when or even if, but just hearing more and more that this thing is coming down the home stretch. So who is not, Chris?
The Oakland A's.
What? I'm confused.
I mean, they started off March 30th last year, 1-0. They were undefeated in the month of March. But in April, they were 5-23 last year, including a 5-game losing streak, a 6-game losing streak, and a 7-game losing streak in the entire month of April.
Details. Ugh. But remember when they were 1-0?
Also, I was looking at their record last year. They only twice did they win three games or more. And that one of them was a seven-game winning streak, which everyone was like, oh, wow.
I forgot all about that. That's right. They did win seven in a row. Okay. We have another return of a new segment. Jason, I know you're excited. And when you're excited, I'm excited. Let's go quickly. Let's go streaking.
It's time to go streaking.
We're going streaking! Yeah!
Who is the Nostradamus of MLB?
Who can keep the streak going? It's time to go streaking.
What the hell are you doing?
We're streaking.
All righty. Take it away.
All right, Dave, you know the game. Chris, you know the game. The whole pool is available. We haven't had a player yet, so you can pick anybody. You try to get a hit a day. If you pick the player and they get a hit, you can't pick that player again. It's that simple. So the everybody's available, I should say, with the exception of the already two postponements today. Rain is washing out the Brewers, Mets, and the Braves, Phillies. But other than that, everybody pretty much is out there. So, Dave, why don't you you get us started with a pick today that you think will get a hit?
I thought about this quite a bit over the day and last night, and you know, there's all the Giants, all the A's, everybody to pick from, but this just seemed right, Jason, because it was a theme last year. I don't think I can start with anyone other than Luis Arraez of the Miami Marlins. Let's see how that goes right away.
You're trying to get on the board.
I'm trying to get on the board.
Yeah. Yes. And remember, we'll keep stats. We'll keep track of our batting average the whole season long. I am going to test Chris's who's hot because he's talked about the A's winning the opener last year. A game is going to be heard tonight here on Sacktown Sports. I'm going against the A's. I'm picking a member of the Guardians, and I'm picking the leadoff hitter, Stephen Kwan, to get a hit today.
Wow. Breaking news.
Yes, Chris.
I think mine's a safe bet.
Yeah?
Shohei Ohtani.
I see what you
Wow. A safe bet.
Should have gone to Mookie.
All right. So if you're not familiar with Let's Go Streaking, here's how it works. All three of us are trying to streak. If our guy gets a hit, that's a one-game streak. Then we pick somebody else, can't pick two in the same streak. And we'll see how high, how long it goes. By the way, do you remember who won last year?
Did you get to 11?
Oh,
I know. I think 10 was the number. I probably have the notes somewhere. I can look it up. But
I think you're right. I think I got to 11. Didn't I beat Jay? Or oh no, Jay was. I got to 11, and Jay. Oh, I think didn't Jay like lose at 10 or something?
Yeah,
like
something
that?
Like that. I think he and I both had a 9 or a 10. And yeah, I think you got to 11. I think you also had the longest hitless streak.
I did.
You had some weird streaks going.
It was an up and down year. And as always, I've said that before, I have had some weird streaks going. We'll take a break when we come back. Marcos Bretón of the Sacramento Bee, as it gets hot and heavy with the Oakland Athletics possibly being in Sacramento for the next 3 years. Marcos wrote an article this morning in the Bee about how Sacramento's the right spot. We'll talk to him about that. You're going to want to hear this conversation next on Sacktown Sports.
The only place in the morning to get your sports fix.
Live and local.
The Carmichael Dave Show with Jason Ross.
Welcome back. Stiles Watkins will be in for a little bit of crosstalk. Right now, been a while since we've had our old friend Marcos Bretón on after... He got beat up by half the country about his Hall of Fame votes, but Marcos is a guy you can throw your sticks and stones. Ain't his first rodeo, to say the least. And this morning, he has an article in the Sacramento Bee on the divorce between the A's and Oakland, and he says Sacramento is the antidote, the one, the only, the lovely, the talented Marcos Bretón. Good morning, amigo. How are you?
Good morning.
Good morning.
So, as things begin to heat up, and it's beginning to sound more like a when this happens as opposed to an if, but of course with John Fisher and friends, you never know until the you-know-who has sung. Marcos, you are a proponent of the A's relocating, at least for temporarily, 2-3 years to Sacramento.
Yeah, I mean, listen, sports business can be ugly, and I don't think there's anything uglier than the situation that's playing out in Oakland, and it may not work out. It's looking like it's not going to work out, and so that would leave the A's with 2 or 3 years where they wouldn't be, you know, playing at the Oakland Coliseum, presumably. And my whole point of writing this thing is I've seen, you know, unnamed people on social media kind of twisting themselves in knots over this.
You can say me.
Well, not just you, but others as well. And I listen, I'm not even going to get into the A's ownership, and what's been said has been said, including by me, and it's not going to change things. The simple point is, though, that in the last couple of years, Vivek Ranadive purchased the Sacramento RiverCats. You know, they have control over the Sutter Health Park, and you know, the owner of the Kings and the owner of the RiverCats went out of his way to give an interview to talk about how Sacramento is and could be a great market for Major League Baseball. And when I really thought about this, I thought there's no downside for Sacramento, for even if it was like a 3-year rental of having the A's here. You know, we're not a community that's trying to rip a team away from another. The owners already voted to approve the move to Las Vegas. The Nevada legislature already allocated hundreds of millions of dollars that would go to a stadium in Las Vegas. That has happened with or without Sacramento. And so my question today was, why not? Why not have them here for 3 seasons? At the very least, as an audition for Sacramento and Major League Baseball.
Yeah, Marcos, I'm with you on that, because Dave and I have been differing a little bit on this, and to some extent. My stance has been, look, I priority one would be to keep him there. I think I always like teams staying if that can work out, but it seems like we're at the point of no return. And if there is a spot where they're leaving as a go-between between somewhere in Vegas and Salt Lake's being mentioned and some other Bay Area opportunities or Sacramento, then I'm with you. Why not Sacramento? So if it does become a possibility, Marcos, what's your belief on, you know, there's only so much amount of disposable income for Sacramentans. How do you think they would do on a 3-year run here if they're still this version of the A's where they're winning 50 to 60 games, but it would be new to Sacramento? How do you think they would do, let's say, for their 3 years at home in Sacramento?
I mean, it's a 14,000 seat stadium when it's completely packed. And I think that we would fill that stadium with ease regularly, if not every single home game. And look, I'm not going to make any comments about, you know, would that end up netting a larger season attendance than where the A's currently are. The situation is what it is, but I do think that Sacramento has demonstrated for a very long time that people turn out, people support the local sports teams. They support the art scene, they support the restaurant scene, they support the music scene, they support big festivals, they support the Run to Feed the Hungry, which is the biggest Thanksgiving race in America. People in Sacramento turn out. It's what we do. And I understand people's deep feelings about the state of the A's. And do I wish that the A's would stay in Oakland? I do. I've been going to the Oakland Coliseum since 1971. And it was, at one time, it was a great place to watch baseball. Obviously, that's not the case anymore. And I feel that, and I think a lot of people feel that Sacramento would completely sell out the stadium for the time that the A's were here, with or without the current owners, that people would go out to support the product, because we would have Major League Baseball in Sacramento. And I just don't see a downside for our community. I certainly see a downside for Oakland, but sure. But that train left already, and it had nothing to do with us.
Marcus Bertone joining us. Marcus, do we know that Oakland's dead for the A's?
We don't. We don't. I mean, I'd be the first. I mean, people thought that Sacramento was dead for the Kings.
Right.
It's like
right.
17 times, you know. And right. So it's never dead until it's dead. And, you know, the Las Vegas mayor even said when she was interviewed about it, she thinks that what the A's want more than anything is the waterfront stadium in Oakland. They probably do. But that plan has been on people's minds for a decade, and it's barely moved. So is there still a chance? Is there still a chance that they could renew their lease at the Oakland Coliseum and play from 25 to 27 there? Yes, there is. Those conversations are ongoing, but the way things are going, there's also a pretty high probability that those talks will not pan out, and then Sacramento presumably could be in play at that point.
Here's where I'm going. You know, there's a lot of A's fans that have referred to John Fisher as a rat. And
yeah.
you know there's a lot of bad blood there. And anyone who's ever had a rat in their house knows that one of the best ways to get rid of that rat is to take away all possible exits until the only place the rat can go is out the sliding glass door. And here's where my issue is. I don't know that Oakland is dead. I know that Vegas has been approved, but I also know that this guy is has a chronic disability when it comes to closing deals. We don't, you mentioned Carolyn Goodman, the Vegas mayor. There's something that may go on the ballot here very quick from the teachers down there. There's all kinds of political issues in Vegas. Vegas is far, far from a done deal, not even to mention the fact that there's doubts that the proposed stadium that they put out can even fit on the site. Plus Bally's, who co-owns the site, is having, there's a lot of stuff. Anyways, here's my point. If the rat is loose and is trying to get to Las Vegas, if we broker them here for 3 years as Sacramento, I feel like we're effectively providing them an alternate escape route, taking away leverage from Oakland and therefore reducing the possibility that they could stay permanently, no matter how small it is. But like you said, we've dealt with this before in Oakland. So in effect, to me, my ethical issue is that it's a bit hypocritical for me. Marcos, you were involved heavily. We were all involved heavily in the Kings thing. I'm tossing and turning with the idea of giving John Fisher any extra exits when you and I both know that if the mayor of Tacoma had said, we'll house the Kings until the arena is built in Seattle, we'd have been pissed off at Tacoma. It's just, I'm not saying you or anyone else is a bad person for wanting this. I agree with all the benefits to Sacramento. That is unimpeachable and undeniable, but it feels like my best friend's wife broke up with him, and before she gets to her new husband, he's got to get out of the military in 3 years so she can stay in my room for those 3 years until he's ready to take over.
Well, a couple things. I don't think Oakland's got much leverage, actually, and if it's, say, if Sacramento stood down on principle, there's always Salt Lake, there's always someplace else. There'll always be someplace else. And I don't think the situation is analogous to a best friend where you're talking about love and emotion. This is business. It has nothing to do with love. I mean, it has to do with love for A's fans, certainly. They feel it. They feel it for the team. But it's this process isn't being driven by love. It's being driven by money. And so... The deal that the A's apparently have wanted in Oakland all this time doesn't seem possible, and it doesn't seem like they're going to be able to close it. So we could stand down, certainly, but I don't see where that would make sense for Sacramento, because, again, the argument that I would make is that, first of all, they couldn't have moved the team to Tacoma because the Kings were for sale. And so they're materialized a viable ownership group in Sacramento that gave NBA owners an alternative to to allowing the sale to go through. So the Kings are still here. The A's are not for sale. And luckily for us, Las Vegas was not in play for the Kings a decade ago, because it might have been a different story at that point. But Las Vegas is in play for the A's. And so all the parameters of these deals are different, and so it really is it can the A's make it work in Oakland? It could still happen, but it gets more unlikely by the day. And so the only way Sacramento would be in play is if there were a divorce. If there were a divorce, it would have nothing to do with us. And if we said, no, we don't want to be a part of this because we don't want to, well, upstep Salt Lake or some other place. I just don't see a direct line between us and stabbing Oakland in the back when the forces that are driving this have really nothing to do with Sacramento. So Sacramento then happens to benefit from it. It's not, to me, it's not a betrayal of Oakland. It's just the way that this thing went.
Marcos, on a follow-up on that, on the follow the money, why aren't the A's for sale in your mind? What is Fisher's end game? Because there are reportedly other people like Joe Lacob who would do what he could to keep that team there and put him on the waterfront. What do you think his end game is here, and why won't he put them up for sale?
I mean, that's a really great question that I would only be speculating. At this point, I think all of us would only be speculating, but Joe Lacob has said publicly before that he would be interested, and the Fishers have not responded to that. You know, owning a major sports franchise it becomes most lucrative if the team is for sale, and so it indicates, at least at this point, a desire by that ownership group. They want to stay in business. They want to stay in the baseball business. And maybe raise the value of the team through a relocation and then sell it at that point. And again, that's only speculation, but at least at this point, the A's are not for sale, and that makes it even more complicated for Oakland, because they don't have the ability to have another ownership group provide an alternative the way Sacramento did. And maybe it's a case where the Fishers are not in financial distress the way the previous Kings owners were. And the deal before Seattle, as we all remember, was to Orange County. And that deal contained a massive loan to the previous owners of the Kings, and it was one of the factors that ended up leading to that deal being rejected. And so in a sense, we were far more fortunate in Sacramento that we did not have an owner that was stubbornly hanging on to the team, because at that point, as we all know, the other owners are going to be deferential to an owner that wants to hold on to the team. So the team is not for sale. Therefore, the team is going to go where the owner wants to take it. And unfortunately for Oakland, they seem to be stuck with John Fisher.
And we're out of time here, Marcos, but real quick, the Kings weren't for sale until several relocations fell through, though we're forgetting. I think that's an important part, until the Maloofs got smoked out of the whole thing. Remember, they weren't for sale either until they agreed to sell to Chris Hansen. I see the parallels, though, with Fisher, about him getting blocked until the team is for sale. It's not like the Maloofs were selling the team from day one. That didn't happen until Seattle.
Right. And maybe 5 years from now or whenever, that'll happen with the A's, but presently that's not the case. Listen, nobody knows where this thing's going to go, but I don't think it harms anyone, nor does it indicate anything negative about Sacramento for saying that, yeah, this can be and should be a landing spot for either this Major League Baseball team or one in the future. And if the A's situation doesn't work out, then I think that Sacramento would benefit from having a Major League team here. And come on, you tell me it wouldn't be fantastic to have Major League Baseball right on the banks of West Sacramento? Dave,
be a dream come true. Be a dream come true. It would be amazing. Yeah, I would love it. We have to break. But Marcos, one of the many, many, many reasons I love you is that we have had many a disagreement over the years, but in the end, we both very much love this city. Whether it's Gary Sheffield or ripping the hearts out of Oakland fans, no one's more stone-hearted than Marcos Bretone of the Sacramento Bee. You can read his article, and we encourage you at sacbee.com today. Support local journalism, of course, and I'm sure we'll be having many, many more of these talks as well. But I appreciate your perspective and really appreciate your time on short notice today.
It's always a pleasure. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
All right, take care. That's Marcos. We're way late for a break. Our apologies. Let's pay some bills when we get back. Hey. Speaking of baseball, it's opening day. Giants, A's, Bob Melvin, Matt Chapman, tailgate boycotts, whatever you want. We'll talk about it all next.